who I know has waited all year for this speech. Just one more announcement that Rabbi Amali did not mention, and that's for next week's Thursday night Mishmar, but I'm going to mention it now, because there are going to be signs up next week. When you come back to Yeshiva Tuesday morning, we'll put them up for the annual Adar auction. So if you have any questions about it, you could ask the Shana Bet guys. Don't bother me. But there's a great opportunity to get a lot of fun and exciting prizes that are being offered by, I would say, the Rebbeim, but usually it's the Rebbetzins that are offering it. So just keep your eye out for that, and we look forward to that. Okay, I want to start off Parshas Mishpatim. A lot of guys here are doing Shnai Mikra. And we all know in the baseball season, when you hit July and August, they're called the dog days of baseball, dog days of summer. That's like, the first few months of the season are fun, everyone's into it, everyone's getting into it. And then comes July and August, and those are what we call the dog days. So I would never consider a parsha a dog day, chas v'shalom. But for all of those who are on streaks, and all of those who are really pushing yourselves amazingly, and doing Shnai and Mikra, so this is where it starts getting a little bit more difficult. This is where it starts getting a little bit more difficult. So my goal over here is to maybe give you a little bit of inspiration to push yourself forward with this. And to push yourself forward with the coming parshiyos, which are very technical, very tedious. The rashis are rashis. They're very, very long. But if you push through, there are some very, very geshmaka story parshas later on. The parsha this week, Mishpatim, starts off, Ve'elo Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lefneihem. All right, that means that, according to Art Scroll, these are the judgments that you shall place before them. So I saw once the question, why is the word Asher Tasim in the future? I will place before them. Why is it in the future? These are the Mishpatim that I am placing right now. Or I placed, or I am placing. Why does he tell us in the future? What's pshat in the future? So I want to tell you a story, a true story. I heard this from multiple outlets, different places, and it's truly an amazing story. I've been saying this story over for years. There was a guy, his name was Dave. Jeremy, not yet. There was a guy, his name was Dave, and Dave was a completely, completely unaffiliated Jew. And he started college after high school, went through a year or two, and then all his buddies came and said, Dave, a bunch of us are going out to Europe, to India, to all over, we're touring the world. Are you in? He's like, I'm in. So they go from one country to the next country to the next country. Half the time they didn't even know where they were going next. And then they were approaching the end of their itinerary, and then a bunch of them said, hey, we're going to go to Israel. So, Dave, you're in? He's like, hey, I'm a Jew. I've never been to Israel. Okay, let's go to Israel. He went to Israel, and he caught the Israel disease. He went to the Kotel. Someone tapped him on his shoulder. Would you like to hear a class about authentic Judaism? And suddenly, he's davening. Suddenly, he's got tzitzis. Suddenly, he's putting on tefillin. Suddenly, he's keeping Shabbos. And suddenly, he gets a phone call from his father. When are you coming home? And then the next day, he gets a phone call from his mother. When are you coming home? And he's like, that plan to finish off college, could it wait? Could it wait like a year or two, maybe, or forever? So the father says to him, if you're not on a plane in a week, if you're not back in our house in a week, I'm coming out there to get you. So he realized he has no choice. He don't go up against dad. And he was really growing in his Yiddishkeit, really pushing himself, but he had never experienced America as a religious Jew, and as an aspiring religious Jew. So a week later, he boards a flight, goes back to America, he comes home, everyone's so happy to see him, he looks so different, what are the strings, what's the head covering, what's all this crazy stuff you're doing, why are you mumbling words under your breath before you eat everything? Everybody in the family is asking all these questions, driving him crazy, and starting to get to him. And they're starting to like, you know, why do you have to be so particular about this? And why can't you eat off my plate? And why can't you eat this food? It's just this. It's just a cow. Who cares? It's just a pig. Who cares? It's an animal, just like a cow is. Why you gotta be so crazy, so fanatical? So he's just like really going out of his mind. And one Friday afternoon, he had a big blow up with his parents. A big, massive blow with his parents. And he saw himself slipping away. He saw the religion slipping away. He saw everything that he worked so hard to attain slip away. And everything that he fought for just slipping away as the seconds were ticking by. And he sat there as it was getting close to Shabbos. And he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's nobody in the house right now. It's just you and me. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you to show me a sign that you're with me. And if you don't show me a sign that you're with me, I don't know if I can hold on any longer. And he sat there and started to cry. A few minutes later, he gets up. He starts preparing for Shabbos. He lights Shabbos candles. Shabbos comes in. And then as he's walking into the dining room or the living room, he by accidentally turned on the light switch. And he just broke down. He was like, this is crazy. I can't do this anymore. And he decided Friday night that Friday night, that's it. I got to throw it all away. I don't have the strength anymore. And he turned on the television. Television is a thing. It's this box that we used to have in houses that, okay, ask the older people in the room. So he turned on the television. And what was on that Friday night? You remember television? Right? What was on the television that Friday night? The David Letterman show. And David Letterman, this is in 1987 the story took place. It's not a story that happened yesterday, I'm sorry. 1987. Many years before you guys were born. And David Letterman is having on his show, for the first time ever, a new actor that had just done a few new movies. It was just becoming popular. His name was Tom Hanks. His name was Tom Hanks. And he has Tom Hanks on, and Tom Hanks is a very gregarious fellow, and he's very, like, talkative, and he's, you know, funny, and everything like that, and they're having a great conversation. And then David Letterman asks Tom Hanks, and he says to him, he says, Tom, you were in Israel recently, weren't you? And he says, yes, I was. I was working there, doing a shooting over there or something, and he started talking about Israel, and he starts talking about, you know, the wilderness over there, and his car got, whatever, his passport got stolen, all these, whatever. And then he says, you know, and Tom Hanks says to Dave Leonard, and Dave, let me tell you something. Come Friday afternoon, everything just gets all calm. You know, and you know, Shabbos comes. And then he turns to David Letterman. Remember, what's this guy's name? This guy who's watching the show, his name is Dave. He turns to David Letterman, Tom Hanks, and he says, Shabbat Shalom, Dave. And this guy is sitting there watching this like, what? Shabbat Shalom, Dave? Now, if you guys don't believe me that this is true, after my shmooze, you can all check your WhatsApp, because I just sent you right now the link to the YouTube link to the Tom Hanks interview with David Letterman. That's pretty sticky. Oh, that's pretty sticky. Thanks, Darren. All right. I even sent you the time that you could, you don't have to listen to the whole, you know, waste your time with the whole interview. Do not look at it now. All right. And it's about a minute's worth of material. And you could see, not just on the bet, because you guys don't have smartphones, but you could see that it's true. And he's sitting there watching the Shabbat Shalom, Dave. And he got up, turned up, no, he didn't turn up the television. He got up and he says, thank you for the sign. And that gave him the strength to keep going. That gave him the strength to keep doing what he had to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Asher Tassim, I will place certain signs, certain messages in the future, in your lives. If you're not going to hop onto it now, I'll send it next week. And if it's not going to be next week, I'm going to send it a month from now. If it's not going to be in a month from now, I'll send it a year from now, or 10 years from now, or 50 years from now. I don't care if you're 95 years old. I will keep sending those messages. But will you listen to your messages? Will you listen to that message? Will you listen to that message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send you in the future? That's up to you. First of all, you have to recognize and realize that there is a message. And once you realize that there really is a message over here, are you going to listen to that message in the future? And speaking about the future, I want to tell you another story that I heard. It was a very young couple that just got married. 3 months into their marriage, they got into a horrible car accident. Left the husband in... The accident left the husband as a vegetable. She, Baruch Hashem, was in the hospital for a little bit of time, but she got out perfectly fine. He was a vegetable. The doctor said, we have no timetable for this guy's life. And every single day she would come in and sit with her husband, and every single day was the same thing, status quo, stable. He was a vegetable, lying there, nothing. Year after year after year, anybody that knows halachically, she can't get remarried. Her life is going to be lonely forever. That's her life. And every single year, she's like going through this thing. Every single year, just visiting. One day she realized, like, I really have to, you know, get my life together. I got to make something out of my life. I can't just sit here, you know, attached to my husband who will never come out of this. So she decides she's going to go to medical school. She goes to medical school and she learns to be a nurse, whatever it is that she learns how to be. And one day she comes in to visit her husband. She would come in every single day, sit with her husband for about 10, 15 minutes every single day. And one day she's sitting with her husband, and she, with her medical experience now, she realizes that on the screen, with all the medical stuff on the screen, she realizes that her husband is having a cardiac arrest, whatever, however you call it. He's having like a heart attack, whatever it is. He's about to die, this guy. Unless he gets resuscitated. On the spot. Now, she could sit there. She has a choice over here. She could say, you know what? My life will finally begin now. But she didn't do that. She immediately called the doctors. The doctors immediately realized what the problems were, and they stabilized her husband. And he went on living for another few years. And she didn't have to do that. She went and sent a message to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. And she said, is this something that I had to do? And Rabbi Zilberstein said, no Jew who is a descendant of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would ever let a person die in front of them. So you did 100% the right thing. How do you get to a level where you realize your whole life is lying in front of you? You have a golden opportunity right now to start your life. Yet, we're talking about a matter of seconds. We're talking a matter of 2 or 3 seconds. How does she automatically know exactly what she's going to do? So I'm going to give you an answer. Okay? I'm going to give you an answer. How does one be that strong? Two things. The first thing is the more Torah learning you learn, the stronger you're going to be. That's number one. But the thing that will gel your beliefs together is the second thing. Amunah. Amunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amunah and Bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you have those two things, Torah learning, Amunah and Bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then when situations come in your future and you have to make a split-second decision about what you're going to have to do, and by the way, I'm willing to put money down that every single person in this room is going to have a situation like that, if not many. You're all going to have those situations. Are you going to pass the test? Are you going to fail that test? Well, let's talk about Torah learning for a second. Right now, I think Rav Rafi and I sat down yesterday, we're trying to make a cheshbon about how much time we have left in the Zman, and we realized we have about 7-8 weeks left of real learning. So Pesach, and then after Pesach, with all the days with Yom HaShoah and Yom HaTzmaut and Shavuos and Lag BaOmer, so you guys basically have like 15 days left to Yeshiva. It's funny. It's scary as anything. Everybody here will say that the year flew by. Yesterday we're standing here by the opening banquet, and today we're standing here telling you, by the way, you have Kama Yamin left to the Zman. It's So if not now, if you're not gonna start your learning, and many of you have started your learning, and many of you are learning. For you guys, I say, don't start. Take it up another notch. That's number one. That's Torah learning. The second thing, Amunah. In this week's parasha, we talk about Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri, the Gemara says, is by day and is by night. And the deeper understanding is that when things are good, we are all an Eved Ivri. We're all slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, slaves to, in a positive way, to do the right thing in Avodas Hashem. And when the Gemara says, by day and by night, that means in the good times and in the bad times. When things are easy and when things are hard. That's what it means to be an Eved Ivri. That's what it means to be a real Eved Hashem. You know, to say in good times, you know, obviously in good times when you're feeling good, when you're not so tired, and you feel energetic, and you feel an urge, you know, everybody wants to learn when they're in the mood to learn. Everybody goes to the when they're in the mood to learn and you're excited, that's when it's easy. I still remember a guy in there, Jake, back in the day. This is a guy that came in the first day. He was an interesting fellow, as they all were. But he came in and he is like, let's go, give me a Gemara, let's go, I gotta learn, give me a Gemara. He sits down and learns for like 2 hours straight. We're like, whoa, what's up with this guy? He didn't last. 2 days later, when he wasn't feeling it, that's it. There it went. Everybody learns when it's easy to learn. Most of us, at least. When it's easy to learn, we want to learn. We want to get into the base. When we want to daven shacharis with the minyan, when we want to daven with the yeshiva, when we want to go to Musar Seder, we want to do all these things. That's when it's easier to do these things. But what about when it's not so easy? I'm going to tell you something that happened a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. I'm going to call him out. He knows I'm calling him out. Ben Hammer came over to me after a very hard afternoon Seder. And he said, this is after, he was not feeling, he came over to me at the beginning of the afternoon Seder, and he said, I have a massive headache, I'm really tired, don't feel well, I don't think I'm going to be around today. I said, push a little bit. About 40 minutes later, Ben came back to me in the base, and he says, I finished the Gemara. He said, but that was a horrible day. You remember that? And I told Ben, I said, that was a horrible day? This is the amazing day! When it's hard, that's when it's amazing. When you push yourself, and you push yourself, and you push yourself, and you do it anyway. When it's hard, that's the amazing day. When it's easy to do it, that's not a chiddush. When it's hard, that's the chiddush. When it's hard and you do it anyway, that's the chiddush. There's one more way to understand Amunah. Amunah is that when you realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do something, everything He does for us is for the best, and we're pushing ourselves, and whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in our situation, whether it's roommates, whether it's Rabbeim, Chabrusas, we push through anyway. We keep pushing even when it's hard. But there's one more way that you, in this room, can chap Amunah, can get Siyata Dishmaya in Amunah. Okay? And this is not something anybody in any other yeshiva is going to hear. It's not something anybody's going to hear. There was a very tragic story that happened last year, Pesach. Very, very tragic story. There was a young chassan and kala who were driving on a highway from Far Rockaway to Brooklyn, Chol HaMoed Pesach. I think the name is Yisrael Levin and Elisheva Kaplan. Her brother lives across the street from me. And they were driving, and a car was driving in a very wild way and basically hit their car, flipped it over, the car basically exploded with them inside. Very tragic. Horrible, horrible story. The stories that they said about the chassan and the kala as individuals were tremendous, tremendous stories. And at the Levaya here in Eretz Yisrael, for the boy, for Yisrael, the father got up and he said, Chol HaMoed Pesach. Chol HaMoed Pesach. We add over here two beautiful neshamis, two beautiful matzahs. And just like a matzah, you have to make sure that they're whole. You have to make sure that there's no chametz that touches them. You have to make sure that everything was done, no outside influences. So too, these two neshamas got the best yeshiva education. These two neshamas were protected from outside influences, from technology, from yetzaharas. We did our best. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we did our best. These are our matzahs. And we all know that on Pesach night, there's a minute to steal the matzah from the father, to steal the afikomen. So Yisrael Levin's father turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Leviathan. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you took away my matzah. You took away my afikomen. So what does a kid do when he takes away the afikomen from the father? He starts negotiating. He starts negotiating. Right? You want my matzah? Right? The kid says, you want my matzah? Okay. It's going to cost you. So Yisrael Levin's father said, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you want my matzah? You want my matzah? It's going to cost you. And he went on to list three things. I'm only going to tell you one of them. The first one was he wanted 10,000 shidduchim for boys and 10,000 shidduchim for girls. The second thing was 10,000 refuah shleimus for girls and 10,000 refuah shleimus for boys. And the third one is the one that applies over here. And with this I'll finish. He says, I want 10,000 girls and 10,000 boys to have siyata d'shmaya in Amuna. And I was watching this funeral. I was watching it live. And I was sitting there with my wife, with two of my kids, and we were crying the whole time. I never met this Yisrael Levin, this Eli Sheva Kaplan. I didn't know them at all. It's a very, very powerful experience to watch this Leviathan. The whole Klal Yisrael at the time, anybody who had heard of the story, it just broke their hearts. Hassan and Kala. And he said, 10,000 boys and 10,000 girls, siyata d'shmaya in their amunah. And I remember, I turned to my wife at that moment, and I said, I want to be one of them. How many people are going to hear these eulogies from this person and say, I want to be one of those 10,000 people? I have no doubt in my mind that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give 10,000 girls and 10,000 boys siyata d'shmaya in their amunah. But I don't know how many people said, I want to be one of them. So I want to tell everybody in this room, not only will you be able to go on a crazy shark ride because you're in this room, but you're also going to be able to do something right now, and you could say it to yourself, you could say it during davening, right after this, it's up to you. If you want to have siyata d'shmaya in your amunah, say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know you're giving out 10,000 freebies right now. And I want to be one of those. And if you have the proper amunah, if you're going to have that siyata d'shmaya in your amunah, and you're going to strengthen your Torah learning at this time in your life when it's the easiest time to learn, that will help you when it will be much harder to learn. The Torah on one side, and the glue, the Amun and Betachin that puts it all together on the other side, will help you make decisions like that woman in the hospital. Will help you hear the messages, like Dave. Will help you be a very solid, solid Jew who's not just somebody who has potential, which my share knows, I hate the word potential. I hate the word potential. It just means that you're not what you could be. You'd be a Jew that doesn't have potential. You'll be a Jew that is living his potential. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. We should all have siyata d'shmaya in our learning and siyata d'shmaya in our learning. Amen.